welcome to Success at Scale, the podcast that covers business stories from experienced entrepreneurs, business leaders, and startup founders on how to translate business ideas into business results. I'm your host, Greg Stein, and today we're going to talk with my good friend, Tommy, who I'm just meeting for the first time. He's the co-founder and CEO at Single, which is the music and video app for Shopify. So I have a feeling that we're going to have a lot of fun because it turns out that Tommy's a music guy as well. He's got a lot of interesting stories to share with us today. He's doing a lot of things with fan engagement and earning opportunities for all creators to take control and content and monetize their work with NFTs, memberships, video on demand, and so much more. Tommy, I'm not going to BS my way through this, man. I want to get to know you too. So let's get started. Tommy, tell us about you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Well, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Your background looks a lot cooler than mine. I'm at home right now, but you clearly have a much better, cooler basement than I do. But no, it's great to be here. And I really do appreciate the opportunity.
Amazing. Well, welcome once again. Tell us about your background. Like, how did you, what's Single? How did you get into it? How did this all come about?
So I guess it's like, I'll start at the beginning kind of thing. So I went to Middle Tennessee State for recording industry, and there's a kind of a two-track program there. One is business and one is engineering. So and this will kind of make sense in a little bit because my co-founder was on one side of it, but so I went to MTSU for music business, graduated right in the middle of the recession, 2010. And when I graduated, it was like impossible to get a job anywhere, and moved up to Nashville back when rent here was $300 and much different city than it is today. But in trying to just find a job, the first place that I landed one was at an Apple store here in Nashville. And through that, I met a gentleman that just like through a Genius Bar point, we were talking about stuff. This is totally against Apple policy, but hey, whatever. It's where I landed. And we just got to talking, and he just so happened to run a digital agency that handled a lot of like fan clubs and websites and web stores for artists. And so I explained my background that I didn't want to be in an Apple store forever. But I always loved technology. I always loved music, and try to find ways to bridge those two things together. So fast forward a couple of weeks later, I went in to take a meeting with him, and I actually was offered a job on the spot. And then starting the next week, I became the account manager for a lot of legacy country acts like Conway Twitty and Kenny Rogers and Charlie Daniels and all these people. And I was running their websites. And so when I was at that company, I spent a lot of time, advocating on behalf of my clients and all of that to the dev team and all. And in that process, I became frustrated with having to tell other people that I wanted like certain front end things to do. So I taught myself some front end code, still can't do back end by any means, just so I could do design because I had a background in that. So towards the end of my time there, it was around 2015, I was the director of music product, overseeing about 500 different properties for a lot of major artists and kind of expanding a bunch of different things. And they shifted from a proprietary e-com system to Shopify. So that specific company had three main divisions. One was a soft goods apparel division. One was the e-commerce and fulfillment side of things. And the last was the web site. And that's kind of the portion of it that I oversaw. But in hearing the issues that the e-com team was having, and we shared a lot of resources around development, trying to get SoundScan reporting. So for those unfamiliar, SoundScan is the data pipeline to have your charts, album sales count on charts like Billboard. And so that is what, if you go into a record store and you buy a vinyl, they submit a report through SoundScan to Billboard effectively. And so from an e-com perspective, all these merch companies, because they were the ones that were just having to submit these things themselves manually. So I said, okay, that if they're having issues doing that, what's this thing Shopify? And so I took a look at the ecosystem and saw that a music app for Shopify just didn't exist. So I enlisted the help of the first person I met at college, another person that went to the music industry program, went on the engineering side, graduated, realized he wasn't going to make any money, and went to go get a computer science degree. So he came back, and so we co-founded the company, Taylor O'Connor and I. And the whole idea was, let's make the music app for Shopify. And so that was kind of the way that it all started. We ended up bootstrapping it until we launched it into the market in 2018. And our first product, and we will get into how we do all the things that we do now, but our first product that we launched with was the ability to sell individual songs, which is where the name single came from in the first place, but also report album sales, be it digital or physical album sales, to charts. And so, yeah, that's kind of what we launched with. And that got us down the path of working with a lot of major artists.
This is awesome. So I have like 1,000 questions for you wrapped up in all this. But I think the first one is, you know, tell me, I mean, it sounds like it was an amazing journey and it was all so easy and simple when you say 2018 and this and that, and, right? But now, sure. But now, as you look at it in hindsight, this wasn't a smooth roller coaster ride, right?
I mean, it's still not in a lot of different ways. I mean, the entertainment industry. And so the path that we took in 2018 launching it, so most people wouldn't realize this because the music business is just this unique thing. In e-com, when you think about a brand, it's usually like you have an agency that handles maybe two to three clients and they help them build their websites. But then ultimately the day-to-day operations of that e-com is the business that they built the storefront for. It's not like Dave Grohl logs into the Foo Fighters Shopify storefront to check, like to run their stuff. And so, and management doesn't do that because they've got a million other things to worry about, and labels oftentimes don't as well. So sitting in between that, there's this world of music merchandisers that have rosters anywhere from 50 to 100 different clients and storefronts. And so our path to market was understanding that those were our initial customers. And so it definitely wasn't easy by any means, but the finding out who our ideal customer was at the beginning, which was, this is an operational product for people that are actually running the storefronts, and going specifically to, and really what I did at night, my wife would watch The Bachelor and I would drink wine with her and I would just go down the Billboard 100 list, find out like who the artist was, what platform that they had their storefront on, who built it. And patterns started emerging, which is part of like the market research that I did before starting the company to begin with, and just said a lot of these people, like about 70% of them are on Shopify. And then of those ones, there's only about 15 to 20 companies that seem to be running all of these things. So that's my customer list. It's 15 people, not all thousands of artists that I need to go to.
Tommy, I got to pull you back from the rabbit hole for a second. Okay. Yeah. Check this out. Your wife was watching The Bachelor, right?
Yeah.
When do you catch up on those Bachelor episodes that you missed?
Well, that's a good question. I usually go back with her anyway, or at least she just fills me in at the end, or just gives me crap because I didn't pay attention to what somebody said right in the middle of the episode.
I guess, you know, I ask this question in jest. This is a kind of a ridiculous question because, but it's not, because my real question is, how do you balance your time doing all of this, right? You were doing it while you were going through the top 100 list. She's on The Bachelor, you know. Sure. But there's an inherent thing that's happening here. You're an entrepreneur who's getting something off the ground, and you're trying to figure out how to also balance life. How do you do that?
Oh, that's a tough one. So now I have two kids, and one of my kids is actually special needs, and so the balancing all that stuff has always been kind of like definitely the toughest part of everything. I mean, in an odd way, you want to be around for your kids in the beginning as much as possible. And in an odd way, the pandemic forced that on everybody, because now you're at home and we made some business changes and stuff during that time that led to more growth and stuff. And so even then it was like, okay, we've got more time at home and I could be around my kids, and my son, my older son requires a lot of attention. And so there's definitely that split mindset of where you're like trying to do stuff. Like for instance, right now, my wife, I think, has COVID, and our other kid. And so this office is in our bedroom. So she's a saint. And I had to say, hey, I've got to record this thing really quickly. So she's downstairs on the couch right now. So it takes having a fantastic partner for sure. And then also just understanding that I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's really like difficult to understand. I work a lot at night and I have a lot of spotty days to where I, like my team is fairly understanding that in the middle of the day, I might have to go pick my son up or go to a therapy or go to certain things. But then I also like make up that time at night. So they'll get a flurry of emails from me from 8 p.m. till like 11 p.m. and then the next day starts. So it's really just, I try to just piece out my day to where it's like whatever's most important and making the people around me understand that like I'm going to get my stuff done, but it's just not going to be in like a 9 to 5 like sectioned time of the day.
You're a special guy, my friend. It's you know what? I applaud you and your family and your approach to focusing on your family as much as it sounds like you do, because at the end of the day, that's number one, right?
But oh, for sure.
When you bring it back to the business side, you've developed this really interesting business, which we're going to learn more about shortly. I'll bring you back to the
room. Wow, all good.
But you know, I guess as I just look at your trajectory as I've heard it so far, right? It's not always easy to balance these things. You mentioned that you bootstrapped at the beginning and you really were smart about the way you did it. Talk about the trade-offs of that. Sometimes you don't even have a choice, but you know, talk about the trade-offs of starting something, being bootstrapped, really doing it, going it alone with your co-founder, your partner, whatever. Talk about that process.
I feel like I got really lucky in this weird way. So when I had the idea to start Single, he was still working at a mortgage bank, and he's like, I want to get the hell out of here anyway. But he was working as an architect over there. And then I quit because I realized, I was like, I know how to build people's websites. I know how to build storefronts and do all of that. And I have always enjoyed having kind of a breadth of knowledge across like what different businesses are doing. So when I left, I went from making like okay money to literally nothing overnight. And then I just started. So I kind of started two businesses at the same time. One was my freelancing, and then the other one was building out Single. And so on the freelancing side, when I say I got lucky, there was this very like brief period of time, like it was pre-COVID and pre all that stuff, to where I got to kind of combine my two main skill sets, which was working like Genius Bar appointments and iPhones and stuff like that, and sales on that side of things, and then managing artist storefronts and doing like front end development and all of that. And there was a company called Use 60 that doesn't exist anymore at the time, and you got paid per minute to code in front of people on Zoom calls. And this was in like 2016. And so I would get commissioned for Squarespace and Shopify users from everything from like glamour, like makeup, to dance halls in New York, to sailing regattas, like all kinds of different stuff. And I would take Zoom calls, and it was basically just like doing a front end, like CSS Genius Bar appointment over Zoom in 2016. And I made pretty solid money doing that. You couldn't do it now because Fiverr and everything like has turned that into like, it was a zero sum game in that. But I had this really nice sweet spot where I was able to take what I was good at and be able to do it for fairly solid revenue at the time. So it was definitely stressful, and it was a lot of work, but it was right before I had kids or anything like that, which would have made it even way harder. But the
perspective is everything. Yes.
Yeah, totally. And so there's I got fortunate in that concept. But the other cool part of that was cool about it is that there was a lot of people that were coming to me with ideas of what they wanted to do for their business, and I was like, I could incorporate this into my site too, like adding in a scheduling thing when they wanted to talk about doing, like they were talking about doing scheduling for appointments around like coming in to get their makeup done or hair done or stuff like that. And I was like, well, I could just set appointments for meetings around the product. And so like now that's Calendly, but at the time that kind of stuff wasn't really like that fleshed out. So I was able to kind of piecemeal and take the best ideas from a lot of businesses that had nothing to do with what we were trying to do at Single, and say, I could see how this applied. So it was both like very educational for me to learn from these people, and I'm getting paid by them to learn from them because I am helping them at the same time. So it was really cool. I mean, that part was really nice. And I think it really helped me out in a lot of ways.
So bring it to today. Where is Single now? What's the status of Single?
So we have about 3,000 storefronts that operate there through us. I mean, again, we are an app that augments on top of Shopify for music and video now, but we work with everybody from like Travis Scott to Adele and Dua Lipa and all these other artists behind the scenes of their storefronts to handle a myriad of things. For Travis Scott, we just did the Utopia record, both on the physical album reporting, the digital album delivery, and we actually did the ticketed live stream from Rome, all inside of his D2C storefront. So that's like us being able to, how do we bring everything into one place where artists can own and control everything? We've done 150 number one records collectively for charts around the globe, 20 million albums reported to the charts, 10 million digital records ish, or 10 million digital deliveries. It's singles and albums in there. So, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff on that side of things. But to kind of explain where it is that Single's going, like where it is right now versus kind of how we started as this chart reporting automation tool set. So we launched with that. 2020, the pandemic, we saw a bunch of live streaming platforms spin up so artists could run ticketed live streams so that way they could generate revenue without being able to go on tour. And so when that happened, because so many did it so quickly, I was like, oh, that just means the technology is commoditized. So I went home and built out a prototype in 3 days. And then one of our first concert was like Dashboard Confessional. And we did it like 2 or 3 days after we built the prototype and sold fairly well. And we said, okay, now we've got like a video product that wasn't really core to the functionality of the app itself. But eventually over time, we became one of the largest live stream ticketing providers during the pandemic because of we've always done everything inside of the merch storefront that they already have white labeled behind the scenes. But we've tried to take things in a unique approach where you could bridge digital and physical. So buy a t-shirt, gets access to content, that kind of thing. So that generated during the pandemic, GMV for the artist side of things was about $25 million. And so that it was very helpful for them to like sell through tour stock and things that they wouldn't have. And yeah, it's just a really great way for them to generate revenue. But as the pandemic began to wane and live music was coming back, we knew that as a business model, as a core function of the business, wouldn't be sustainable, just in the same way as we see like our digital download service isn't what the long-term progression of what we want the company to be. So we began kind of like pulling back and divesting isn't the right term, but just kind of refocusing our efforts around video. And so what Single has progressed and turned into at this point and is our trajectory moving forward is we want to basically be the digital content layer for Shopify between audio and video. And so over the next few months, a lot of what we've been working on for the last year really is going to begin to really bear out. And so what I mean by that is like you can have audio in the sense of like short form, 30-second snippets, and I want to sell an album kind of thing, and you can sell it that way. Or I could have long form audio like a podcast or something like that. And then on the video side, we have live streaming and we have video on demand side. So you could put like libraries of video content inside of a storefront, or you can run like live streams to do live shopping and all these other stuff. But above that layer, we also provide a monetization layer that you can kind of Lego block your solutions to build a lot of different things. And so you have audio and video, and then above that, you have what we internally kind of call like timed access. Then you have memberships and you have token gating and Web3. We actually do have like a whole Web3 component to the business, and then downloads as well. And so theoretically, you could say, I want to build a subscription video service on top of Shopify. We can do that. And so you could literally build Netflix in like 15 minutes using our tooling. We are soon going to be releasing where you can have physical products on our subscription. So like you could create Amazon Prime isn't like the exact analogous thing, but let's just say you create a vinyl club. But while you're in that vinyl club, you also get access to exclusive on-demand content or live streams or whatever. We have artists like Nickelback that run their fan club through us by using our subscription and membership side of things. So for us, all of those clients, it's funny, they're all music, but where we see our future is becoming a industry agnostic digital content like tool set for Shopify. So you could be a creator that like does cooking classes, and you also sell memberships to more premium content, but underneath the videos you have the knives that you're using in the class for sale, and you can use that to generate additional revenue. So yeah, our vision is more digital content agnostically. So you can do more with that inside of a D2C storefront. So you can sell literally everything else.
Sounds really good. I mean, you guys are doing a lot of things. I'm curious to dig into, you know, you kind of alluded to things aren't always the way that they seem or you think they're going to be as you got into this, right? Let me bring it back to kind of your business story, right? And the way that things kind of moved around or pivoted, or you divested, you got invested, wherever you went. You know, talk to me about how do you navigate that, and how do you really pay attention to the nuances of what the market needs are and where you guys should take things forward?
Well, it's twofold. I am the type of person that's always like coming up with ideas and having to bounce them off my co-founder and leadership team of like what makes the most sense, but then also balancing that against user interviews and just asking people what it is that they want. Good examples are, we'll have people that will ask us for a specific function, and then I'll go out to people that are comparative to them that we already have as customers and just ask them, is this something that you are also interested in? And if there's enough people that say yes, then that says, okay, we're pre-selling a product we don't have yet, but we know that our user base is interested in that. So we try to take an approach of pushing the market forward, because like doing video inside of a Shopify storefront or doing music direct to consumer inside of a Shopify storefront at its core weren't necessarily things that like you have to drive the market towards the direction that you want them to go, or it's like, hey, you should host some of this content inside of your storefront a week before you put it on YouTube, so then you can sell more product and use your first set of eyeballs. So you need to educate people that this is a concept that you could do, and it's not adding a ton of work onto what you would have already done anyway. You're just kind of shifting your initial distribution channel. And then once you do that, then they're like, oh, it would be really nice if I had this. It'd be really nice if I had this. So there's like a combination of pushing people in the direction of where we think that they should be going and would be beneficial, and try to prove that to them. And then at the same point, take their feedback of, here's things that we missed in our initial idea of trying to push people in that direction. So they're like, it'd be great if I had this, it'd be great if I had this. Okay, great. Does anybody else think that that's the same thing? It's kind of both.
Sounds really good. Where do you think, I'm heading to TechCrunch Disrupt next week.
Nice.
And, you know, really paying attention and working with quite a few AI, machine learning, you know, Web3 kind of companies. What, in your opinion, where do you think everything is right now and where it's going with AI? What's your take?
Well, I think that from my opinion, there's two sides of it. You have the generative side of things, and then you have the BI side of things, like all the business intelligence portions of it. And I think that for the generative portion of it is clearly going to be disruptive to the music business. And I think it's going to be more heavily disruptive to things like sync licensing and stuff like that, because then somebody would be like, I made a piece of content and I don't want to go license somebody's track. I can just be like, hey, YouTube, can I put some music that sounds like this behind it? I think that that would be one of the more disruptive technologies there. Plus other IP rights and stealing people's voices and stuff like that. But that's a whole different can of worms. I think in the shortest run, as things move moving more quickly, like music industry is always, it's funny because it's both at the forefront in terms of like getting disrupted by people at the smaller end, but it's also in the way behind when it comes to just doing typical business things. And what I mean by that is analyzing your e-com traffic to determine who is my top customer, so then I can remarket to that person or like super serve them when they're coming to a show and sell them a ticket or something like that. And on the BI portion of it, it's where I think would be super beneficial is if you're an artist manager and you're able to suck in data sets from something like your Shopify and the data that Single generates from how much content is watched and that kind of stuff. If you could say, like, we can do this in the context of, you can go into our dashboard and you can go into somebody's like any state and say, who's my top fan in that state. But if I was an artist manager, if I could just pull out a GPT like thing as like, we're at a show in Tulsa, who's our biggest fan here? And it's like, here's your top five fans here, and this is what they spent, and here's the behaviors. So that way it's just an assistant to like fan management and fan relationship. I think that's where it'd be really interesting, because there's just so much data that they don't know what to do with it. And they need somebody to show them how to action on it without it being like a burden that they have to check in and on all the time.
It's perfect sense, Tommy. It really does. You know, one of the things that I always like to ask everybody that I talk to is, you know, it is a crazy time and has been since this pandemic and maybe even before. But, you know, as it goes on, you know, not everything's hunky-dory out there. It's not always easy. No. You know, what advice would you give to anybody that's listening to this and say, you know, hey, I know it's not easy right now. You might be struggling. You might be having a hard time. Here's a couple of words of wisdom. What would those be?
I mean, I'll go from personal experience. I mean, we didn't raise a lot of capital and haven't as a business overall, but we also decided to raise at the worst possible time, where it's like, you
isn't that funny, like, how that works, right?
Yeah. So it's like, we had competitors that raised like a lot of money just 1 year before us, and they're either out of business or whatever. And then we're trying to raise a fraction of it, and it's been a slog. So I think my biggest piece is, even regardless of like externalities that you can't control in the market and trying to raise and trying to get your idea out there, at least the thing that I have to tell myself and would tell anybody else is like, just keep at it. Because if the idea is good and you're having enough people that are validating the concept of it, then you can continue on. There's enough people out there that if you go to them and you're telling them your idea, and in the many no's that you will get, or you're not far enough along or whatever, from VCs and different things, then there's enough nuggets in there where they're like, no, this is actually like a really good idea. Like, we want to keep that conversation going. Whereas if it's a bad idea, they'll tell you. So you can kind of self-validate of whether or not, even through the nose, like, okay, this is still a good idea and I should continue going down this path. They might not have been necessarily the right person on that, but just constantly self-check, like, okay, am I getting no's because there's just something else out there and the market's just weird, or am I getting no's because this actually isn't necessarily like an idea that people think is going to be able to scale?
I think you're spot on about something. This is really important, actually. We at Triple G focus very much on taking operating roles first. We really focus on the business at hand, which is very different than most that are out there in terms of the venture world. And mm-hmm. So for us, we look at, you know, ideas being solid, yes, but also the people behind it being solid and the business itself being solid, right? If you have a scalable business that is worthy of investment, then it you know, you're right. You know, then you need to keep at it. The thing is that most people, you know, get sucked into this idea of telling some grandiose story and missing the real business basics behind how are you going to get there and deliver on your business idea. And I think, you know, if I was to kind of echo what you're saying and add to what you're saying, which is really focus on the way that you're going to actually operationalize your idea and show it in a business case that has clear ROI for the investor. Because a lot of times people skip that part and it becomes painful. But back to you, Tommy. I think you have a wonderful story. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. So, like, what's next for you? I mean, you got a lot on your plate. You're trying to do some fundraising. Maybe we'll talk, you know, but what's next?
It's really so for what we're trying to do is it's interesting, because as a platform that is predominantly handled in music and then added video onto it and has a predominant user base in music, every musician has video, but not every brand, creator, business has music. And so the thing that got us to the point where we are is actually what alienates us as we continue to expand into these other places. And so we have plans and strategies of what we're going to do around that, but it is kind of simplifying the approach back from saying that it's music, it's audio, because audio can then be podcasts and these other things. But we're also taking a strategic approach where we're going out to various partners, and if somebody's listening and might want to take me up on the offer, but we're basically going to like we found a comedy label that had a lot of video content and said, let us build you what this platform is capable of. So then we can use that as a case study and show it to other people. Because if I go at this moment to a random cooking podcaster or chef or something like that, as from a sales perspective, and said, hey, can we do this thing? We're like, you guys help report Adele's records. Like, what does it have anything to do with what I do? So we're taking this approach of saying, okay, look, we can do all this stuff in music. We have a core functionality there. We know a lot of that industry. And so for us to both learn and to expand and show the use cases beyond that, we are doing stuff in comedy. One of the next ones that we're doing is in sports. So we'll be showing like an example of being able to build almost like an ESPN like experience using our product on top of Shopify, going from that into finding somebody in the cooking space. So if anybody is listening that is in that space and wants to chat, let me know. But we're just going to strategically show all of the different things that you can do with it, because Single itself has not really ever spent any money on marketing or advertising. And only then, once we have examples that we can show, clear onboarding flows to do like solid product-led growth strategies through that, are we going to invest spending any money into marketing and advertising? And I will caveat in the sense, if anybody out there is listening, and we do talk about a venture side of things, one of the big problems is for a lot of people where it's like, we're just going to throw money at marketing and advertising, and then that's what's going to end up being the growth. That's not like, we're in this the mindset. It's like, okay, let's get the platform into a place where we can still do direct sales growth. And then once it's become, we've like used direct sales to build the platform to a point where it has a better UX for PLG, then we can start testing marketing and advertising to determine what the ROI is on that. Because then we can specifically say, hey, this is the path that we're going to do for marketing to a cook or to somebody in sports and lifestyle or something like that. And so our next phase is kind of twofold. One, it's like the rest of the year, we're changing out to like kind of full circle the platform. So that Lego blocks approach like has a much clearer flow of like how you can piece all these things together in a much easier way. Then phase two, like next year, will be from a product perspective, combining the data that Single is generating for these creators, artists, brands with the data that is provided to us from Shopify. So that way I can say that Greg is the biggest fan in Boston, has spent X amount in your storefront, has watched X amount of content, has made these comments and all these different things. And because all of that data is generated first party, it's owned by you as the merchant. And then from a marketing and advertising side of things, we're going to be building out kind of examples of these different use cases over the next few months. So then when we, in parallel to moving into having analytics more deeply baked into the product, we'll have advertising and marketing that's starting to feed people into the system. So we can start seeing like, let's test these markets. Let's see how it grows into them. And let's start shifting our core, because it's like 90% of our business is music. And so we want to be able to expand that to be like, we want it to be about 50% music and then the other stuff, because we still have our hearts there. But yeah, that's the way that we're going to end up testing it.
Well, Tommy, we're almost out of time here. I just have one more question for you, which is what do you think is the one question that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you today?
Oh, that is a tough one. I don't know. I think you asked a lot of good ones, because you asked the how's your home life one, which is what people usually don't ask about. Yeah. So one of the things that I do really like about our relationship on the Shopify side of things, there's a person over there, Julia, I'll give you a shout out. She is really good about asking how everyone's mental health is. And I've always been a big like mental health advocate, because I struggle with that just as much as a solid portion of just general population, and then tack on the entrepreneurship side of things of that too. So I have like the good days and bad days portion of it. And I think that, maybe it's just the management style side of things and being cognizant of that. There are definite days where it's like, I can't perform to my best, and I have to be comfortable telling my team is like, I have to take the day. Like, I'm having an off day kind of thing, but then being gracious when your employees do the same thing. And I think that's the tough part is like you want, I think for a lot of leaders where it's like you see these things and you feel good that day. And so you're like, oh, I want this stuff to get done. And then because it's your thing, you're kind of pushing people, not realizing that you just asked them to cover for you when you weren't having a good day as well. So I think you kind of touched on it on that with that question a little bit too, but I think that it's always just important to like ask specifically, like, how is the mental health of the entrepreneur overall?
Right on, man. Right on, Tommy. I love your vibe. I love your approach. I love the way you kind of look at everything. And I'm giving you a virtual high five right now.
Hey,
just saying, a shout out to you. So listen, I want to thank you, Tommy, for being so open, so clear about your story from success to scale. Sounds like it's still going to scale, which is pretty awesome. And obviously, if we can be helpful to you in any way, we're here. But for now, where can listeners find you online, Tommy?
Well, anybody can reach out to me, tommy@single.xyz. Our website is single.xyz, and you can find me on LinkedIn too. I'm not on many other social media platforms, so you can find me there. And I'm not telling you what my Reddit name is, so that's the only
other. All
right,
fair enough. We'll keep that a secret. Anyways, Tommy, what a pleasure getting to know you. Single is super cool. Check it out for sure. For anybody that's listening out there, please like, share, subscribe, all that social media good stuff. And until next time, we will we'll keep pumping these out, and we'll bring you some more good stuff from good people doing great things. So until next time, peace.